Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 96. Dave, it's Friday the 13th. All hell are going to break loose where you are?
Yeah, I got to write a check to Uncle Sam today, 3 days before my birthday. I gave a disclaimer on Twitter last night that my assholeness will be more than usual probably today. So be careful with me on Twitter today. But, yeah, Pens Flyers tonight, game two after a disgusting collapse the other night that we talked about pre-show there. Of course, this is not a Penguins podcast. It's a Steelers podcast. But it's a great day to be alive, David.
All things Pittsburgh sports is what we are, but with the focus on the Steelers. And for those of you, Dave will be on 93.7 The Fan tonight at 1 a.m. So it'll be crack of dawn Saturday morning Eastern time, or not crack of dawn, but as the clock turns. So 1 a.m. after you get good and lubed up with a nice big Penguins victory and hopefully a little Pirates afternoon win against San Francisco, you can listen and talk some Steeler football here, Dave Bryan with Chris Muller on 93.7 The Fan. So even though that's the competitor, Chris is a good guy, and always want to hear Dave on the radio. That's great stuff. So pay attention to that. And just to preview Tuesday's show, Dave, we're going to have Dave Tay Thomas, who writes up the NFL scouting reports.
Absolutely, and he sent us our little gift packages over the other day that I forwarded along to you.
And by the way, we want to encourage all our listeners to send us gift packages, whatever it is that you have that you want to send.
Be careful what you ask for, David.
I don't want any Ted Kaczynskis out there.
Yeah, no doubt. But, yeah, Dave, we had him on last year. Many people, longtime listeners, will remember. Real colorful guy. I think started scouting at the age of 13 or 14 for Al Davis, writing up draft reports. We'll get him to cover his beginning in scouting again. And I figure we're going to have him for a good 30 or 35 minutes talking Steelers draft and some of these prospects as well too. So make sure you tune in specifically to all the Terrible Podcast, but the Tuesday one for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, Dave, let's get right in it. As you know, the Steelers traded Mike Wallace last night. They got 7 first round picks, and I mean, oh, good God. Hey. Here we are. It's April 13th. We've been telling people how this is going to go. They changed the narrative on us here between Tuesday and today. We told him he's not getting an offer sheet. April 20th is the drop-dead date for the offer sheet. We're 7 days away. The Mike Wallace countdown's down to 7 days. But since he can't, he's probably not going to get this offer sheet. Everybody decided to change the story because Adam Schefter says Mike Wallace is not going to sign his RFA and he's not going to go to OTAs. He didn't come out and say he's going to hold out, but by not going to OTAs, you know, you're effectively holding out a little bit. And now everybody's like, well, the Steelers are going to trade Mike Wallace. Jesus, here we go again.
Yeah, exactly. I told you this was coming, man. I know how these people work. I tried to cut it off at the pass on Twitter the other day and get people to start worrying about what the Ben Roethlisberger statue would look like about 10 years from now, 15 years from now outside of Heinz Field.
I saw some funny responses to that, too. That was some funny stuff.
Yeah, that actually created some good conversation. But, hey, let's look at the Mike Wallace situation here. And as you and I always do, we take the blinders off and look at it both sides and what all is involved here. And, you know, people are trying to compare this to the Santonio Holmes situation, and it's totally, totally different. First of all, Mike Wallace is a restricted free agent, okay? If teams wanted him right now, let's look at the basis of this, David. The kid wants a big contract. So that's where we start. The kid wants a big contract. Is it Larry Fitzgerald money that he wants? We don't really know for sure. That's what a report by Matt Barrels stated a few weeks back ago. But he's a restricted free agent.
But as we know, everybody postures agent's job is to, you know, create a
sure.
Ball. That's exactly what's been going on. So look, everybody knows he's not getting Mike Wallace money. So that's point one.
Right, exactly. Now when we go from there, you have to look at what he stands to lose. Well, actually, I guess we should back up here. If teams wanted him right now for a big contract and a first-round pick, they have, what, 7 more days they can get that done and not have to worry about trading for Mike Wallace, and they don't have to worry about whether or not the Steelers will trade him to him in division or not.
Yeah, now the two things there is, one, effectively they're trading for a first-round pick, and two, obviously the condition there is the Steelers can match.
Exactly, but you know, what is the breaking point there? We've discussed this a million times. Is it 10 or 11 million first year, you know, cap hit that they're willing to absorb? And let's face it, there's not a lot of teams out there right now with the cap space that could get this done right now. You know, the Bengals
It's not happening.
Right. Okay. Now let's get past there. What does Mike Wallace stand to lose by not signing this tender?
And this is the key.
And this is the key, you know, if he does not sign that tender by June 15th, the Steelers can reduce that tender of $2.742 million. Basically, they have the right, if they give it to him in writing and all like that, is to reduce his tender to 100% of last year's salary. So basically
110%.
Right, to retain his rights. And no team can sign Wallace past the 20th deadline anyway. So basically he's staring at looking at
$550,000.
Right, $577,500, I think, to be exact there. So that kid goes from standing to make $2.742 million down to making $577,000. So
there's your math. Basically, but by taking a stand, he's in exactly the same situation and could potentially make $2.2 million less.
Exactly. Now, let's say if he says, well, fine, I'm fine with that. I'm going to hold out like, who was it, Vincent Jackson and Logan?
Yep.
Logan Makins, I think.
Yep.
Hold out through the first 10 weeks and then come in and sign that and play the final six. That ain't gonna happen. Don't mess with the Rooneys in this situation.
B, you can still get hurt if that's what you. I don't think that's the issue, but yeah, you can still get hurt. And C, you get that prorated $577,000, so you're basically gonna make $200,000.
Yeah, and then there's a chance that you might not be included in the offense that you might not know. At that point.
And then the last work that anybody's got of you is the second half of last season.
Yeah, exactly. So, sure, you go in. And, hey, you know, at that point, they'd let him walk.
Oh, absolutely.
They would let him walk just like they let Plaxico Burress walk.
And he's going to get a lot less than Larry Fitzgerald money under that scenario.
Well, he might get paid, but you know what? At least he would leave via an unrestricted free agent, and the Steelers can end up getting a third or a fourth round compensatory pick.
Well, if it actually goes like that, they won't get that high a pick because you just won't have played and done enough.
Well, no, it counts on what he does the next season.
The next year, too, right.
Yeah. Right, the next, and plus the contract that he signs. If you look back, and that's why this is, if you look back at the Plaxico situation, I think, if memory serves me, when they let Plaxico walk that year, the following year they received a fourth-round compensatory pick for that. So, basically, you used up the early good years of Mike Wallace. You didn't have to pay him for anything. And you got what you spent on him, which they got him in the third round. So let's say they got a third or fourth round pick, compensatory pick, and you got the cancer out of the way. You cut the cancer out of there. So, you know, that's the only way this can go down.
And let's look at this just from another angle here about the Steelers side of trading Mike Wallace. Here's the deal. 2012 counts too. I mean, the Steelers got a team that is capable of making a Super Bowl run again this season. We'll see what happens in the draft, but this year counts. And we'll get into what else they did this week because it's good stuff. But, man, let's not forget Mike Wallace is a really good football player. And you got Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Heath Miller, Jericho Cotchery back in the fold. Ben, you know, can you say weapons? Ben Roethlisberger has weapons like crazy. And Mike Wallace is a huge part of that. Whether you think he's the best receiver in the game or not, whatever. He did have a down second half, and there is a small question about his attitude. But let's not throw Mike Wallace under the bus. And everybody, I think, is a little too eager to throw Mike Wallace under the bus. We've not heard any of this stuff out of his mouth directly. We haven't heard him say he wanted Larry Fitzgerald money, and he said at the time on Twitter, don't believe everything you hear. We have not heard him say he's not going to sign his RFA. That came from Adam Schefter, who's a good reporter who has broken a ton of stories, and he's been right a ton of times. But let's not just throw Mike Wallace under the bus here because of some media reports, okay? So the Steelers, this year counts. They get Mike Wallace for $2.7 million. They're happy to pay Mike Wallace $2.7 million. Trust me. They are happy to pay him that amount of money and have him be the productive receiver. He's been his first three seasons. He's a very important part of this offense. And look, if it doesn't work out and they can't reach a long-term agreement, I know Dave thinks they will. I don't think they will. But if they can't, it's okay. But they're not giving Mike Wallace away this year. I don't care what kind of package comes down the road. I mean, I just can't see it. I can't see it at $2.7 million. He's great value. If they got in a situation on June 1st, and you know, at that point, the draft has already taken place, so you're not getting a guy or any added pieces for 2012. So, you know, this isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen from Mike Wallace's perspective. It's not going to happen from the Steelers' perspective.
I couldn't have said it better. And, you know, when you look at the Santonio Holmes situation, Santonio was a guy that was heading into his final year under contract, okay? Plus, he was facing a four-game suspension on top of that. Plus, he was, you know, he had all the others, the baggage holding over his head and all. As well, too, you know, the stuff on Twitter.
Fake and bake and, you know, go kill yourself. And
exactly. And that's where it's a little bit different here. And the Steelers chose, they knew that they were not going to be, they knew they did not want to lock up Santonio long term. So instead of lose him, you know, basically for nothing or just a compensatory pick and have to carry him in that locker room all season long with that stuff, you know, hanging over his head, the four-game suspension, why not go ahead and trade him prior to the draft? And that's what they did, and people are angry that they only got a fifth-round pick for him. But look what they did with that fifth-round pick, though. They parlayed that basically into Antonio Brown. So, you know, it's a totally different situation, and the two should not be compared in any situation, in my point. And I'm with you. And look, if Wallace would have signed it, and there's still a chance that this can happen, and as you said, we don't know if the media report's 100% true. But if he goes and he signs his tender, he works his way through you know, the OTA sessions and all like that, is a good boy through training camp, I do think that there's still a good chance that maybe he gets a deal done. Now, is it going to be Larry Fitzgerald money? Absolutely not. But by that time, the Steelers will have a real good idea of what the fat of the salary cap trimmed off the roster is at that point, which there's still a lot that they can do, and they'll have a better idea of what the top amount they can afford at that time. So I don't want to rule him out being signed long-term. I'm not going to rule out them not doing it long-term either, but this is nowhere near what the Santonio Holmes situation was.
Right, and Dave, let's get into this topic for a second. We haven't touched on this. I think it got glossed over a little bit. It came out by Eric Bedard in the Boston Globe last Sunday. I sent you a copy of the article. I'm sure you've now had a chance to look at it. There has been a general perception of you, me, and everybody else, because we've been led to believe, because of the booming television contracts, that this cap number that's at basically $120 million last year, this year, and around that number next year, is going to explode in 2014. And it certainly is not guaranteed where this is going to go, because the two negotiators, you know, who's the players, DeMarcus Smith, said that, you know, in this interview that he didn't have a great sense of where things exactly were going to be. But now basically, the Players Association is a chance to look at the owners' books, and they realize that, you know, they weren't lying about what they were making. These numbers are what they are. But now, Dave, it's, you know, Eric in his article, actually Greg Bedard, excuse me, I'm thinking of the Pirates pitcher. He has said that this cap number in 2014 is not going to go up that much. And in fact, over the next 3 years, after 2014, 15, 16, it might not go up at all. We might be looking at $120 million-ish for the next 5 years. This is not, now, I'm not suggesting that the Steelers and their management or anybody else knows anything All the teams have the same information, so they may know this, or if they just found this out, all the teams found it out at the same time. I'm guessing more the former. The people within NFL front offices have been aware that this may be the case and have been dealing under that assumption. But that's certainly new news to us as fans and to the media, and I don't know that it's gotten the attention that it probably deserves.
Yeah, and listen, I like Greg Bedard. I think he writes he's one of the ones that's not afraid to write about anything and is usually has his facts straight. I'm going to call a little – I'm not going to say that this is not going to happen with a flat cap heading into 2014. But listen, the way the Steelers have been managing their cap right now and the way they've been back-ending some of this stuff towards 2014, I can't see how this would all of a sudden creep up and them be caught by surprise by something like this, because let's face it, if that were to happen, there's going to be, you want to talk about salary cap hell, that year definitely sets up for the Steelers to be something like they faced this past offseason. But
yeah, the good thing for the Steelers in the sense of how they've restructured the contracts, and you notice that they didn't do, it appears they didn't do anything more than was necessary in terms of creating cap room. The good thing is, you and I talked about this at the time, is none of this money is likely to be dead money. The guys that they restructured and extended, maybe Ike Taylor has a chance to be dead money, but you know, Ben's not going to be dead money. Most of the guys, Woodley, you know, the guys that they restructured, I don't see this being dead money. And in that sense, it shouldn't hurt them at all. It's when you restructure and you end up having dead money because you end up cutting guys that you could really get in a bind. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But I thought it was worth just touching on because I haven't seen many people touch on it, or I certainly haven't heard anybody talk about it.
Yeah, and I think just going off that one report right now, being that there really hasn't been much after that to kind of back it up, I think it's mere, probably an educated speculation, if there is such a thing, as far as the cap goes. Listen, we thought the cap would jump to about 125 this year, and it didn't. It stayed flat. There's talk that it could go up to, as high as maybe 128, 130 next year, but it's probably going to stay flat again. And let's look at this, too, also. Remember that these teams, these first 2 years to transition into this have been allowed to take these those credits as well too, and those credits are expected to be paid back, I think, in starting in 2014. That, you're borrowing those veteran the first year last year was $3 million credits. This year is $3.5 million credits. That's just not free money. That's money that has to be accounted for later on down the line. Why would they set that up in a way where you're still in a flat cap situation would be my question. So until I read a little bit more on that, David, I'm not willing to say, oh, Lord, we're going to have a flat cap in 2014. So I just don't think there's enough info on that.
Yeah. So interesting stuff. We'll see how that plays out. And it certainly would be interesting if we ever got a chance to talk to Omar Khan about things to run that by him. That'll be our if somebody wants to send that as a gift, they can send us Omar Khan for a little half hour interview.
That would be a 6-hour podcast.
That would be a solid birthday gift, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Dave, well, let's get into the other stuff. And I'm going to just, you know, I have been waxing on about my love for Jericho Cotchery and how I just thought a 3-year, $4.5 million deal was the right thing. And I just really thought he was an important guy to add and it would happen after April 20th. Well, I got it. I think I got it 3/4 right, or the Steelers got it 3/4 right, or whatever. We came to some kind of conclusion here that it looks like Cotchery signed. It's a 2-year deal. It looks like he has signed. It looks like it's about $3 million, and I just couldn't be happier.
I couldn't be happier either, man. I mean, this is a guy. This is a typical Steelers way of doing business here. Let a guy go out and test his worth on the free agent market, see if he gets any offers there. They knew for sure that Cotchery wanted to come back to Pittsburgh. Cotchery wanted to come back to Pittsburgh. He's a great fit in Pittsburgh. He's a perfect insurance to the Emmanuel Sanders feet situation. He's a great locker room guy, a good veteran presence that can kind of carry the torch for Hines Ward. And immediately after the deal was announced, I posted on Twitter that I'd be surprised if it totaled out over $3 million. And later that evening, Ed Bouchette let us know that Cotchery's deal was for $3 million over 2 years.
Hey, Dave, before we're going to pat ourselves on the back, I tweeted that it will be $3 million.
Well, right on. We're both right then. Yeah,
yeah, let's go.
I mean, it's a great signing, and it's a great price. And basically, the way it is, I have not seen the exact numbers on this, but I'm willing to bet the 2012-2013 base salaries are basically the minimum for his accrued years. So that'd be $825,000 base for 2012, $940,000 for 2013. That totals out to 1.765. Now we just don't know what the signing bonus was, or if there are any roster bonuses included in that. So roughly his first year cap hit is going to be around $1.325 million for 2012. And when you look at displacement on the top 51, rule of 51 for this year, he basically ate up $1 million of cap space. So what a value there. Plus, this is a guy, if he stays healthy, produces this year, you know, he's going to be on the roster in 2013, in my opinion, as well, too. So a great signing, a signing that probably 80% of the people in Steeler Nation wanted to happen, and it worked out great on both sides, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally agree. And then the other thing we saw here, we saw Doug Ligurski signed his RFA. No real surprise there. He's back in the fold. Everybody kind of expected that. You and I talked on last week about Trey Essex. You posted about him. It looks like somebody ate half of Trey Essex. He has disappeared. He looks like a guy who's going to run the high hurdles in that suit that's on his the picture on his Twitter feed. Looks fantastic. And we both wondered, is he big and strong enough to continue to be an interior lineman? Well, the Steelers apparently think so. This is another good signing. You look, it'd be ideal if Trey Essex was on the roster and never saw the field this coming year because the line was healthy and was doing their job. But here's a guy who you mentioned filled in very admirably at center for Pouncey against the Rams this year. He can play both guard spots. In a pinch, he can play tackle. So he's got some versatility, some value. Another guy also wants to be with the Steelers, a good character guy. So all around, a really nice week.
I agree, and there's some people that are upset to see him back, and I'm not one of those because of the veteran experience that he brings. Now, am I hoping that he wins one of the guard spots? Absolutely not. He can play tackle badly in a pinch if we need that. But yeah, I mean, he looks good, and hey, I'm excited to at least to see how he moves athletically now that he's lost all this weight, man. His calling after football should put up a website of how he lost all this damn weight
getting the food, whatever it is.
Yeah, because this guy, he looks great. He really, really does look great. It'll be interesting to see how athletic he moves in camp, how athletic he is in preseason. But he gives you yet another guy that, from a depth standpoint, interior, as you said, we found out he can play center. And, in fact, that might have been his best game that we've seen in probably 2 years. From him was coming in for Doug Ligurski early on in that Rams game and taking over there. So it's nice to have a third emergency center on your team there. Now is his contract, although I have not seen the figures on that, it's going to be one of these 1 year qualifying deals, David, where basically all that they're invested in him is a signing bonus, which is likely under $65,000. So, hey, if he comes to camp, he doesn't work out, you have better talent on the roster, you can cut him. No harm, no foul there. On the flip side, if he makes the roster, he comes with that reduced cap hit as well, so you really get a bargain there. All in all, this guy probably moved the salary cap needle this week about $200,000. So he knows the Steeler way, good guy to have in a locker room. As well. So, hey, this is a typical Steeler move, and I like it.
Yeah, I do too. Not sexy, but you know, bringing your own guys back. Now, there was one other move. It's a move that may not have much of an impact over the course of the year, but we'll see. You know, it's a guy, Leonard Pope. We talked about it on Tuesday because he was coming in for a visit. Now, it turned out after we did the podcast, they actually signed him. I think you hit this right on the head again. It's around $700,000. There'll be a little bit of a signing bonus again. I think you put up that the impact on the salary cap, almost negligible, maybe $65,000 to $100,000, somewhere in that range. This is a guy who's 6'8". He's been with Todd Haley in Arizona and Kansas City. He was a third-round pick out of Georgia, a six-year vet. He's a guy who at 28 or 29, whatever he is, will provide some insurance. I think you and I are on the same page here. We think Wesley Saunders is going to be back. The Pittsburgh beat writers, certainly the Post-Gazette guys, think that he's gone. Now, I don't understand the logic there, because if he was gone, they would have made this move already. I don't know why you would wait to make a move and then, okay, he's suspended for the first four games, so you're going to cut him at the end of camp. Wesley Saunders, I think, is a talented guy. I think the Steelers view him as a talented guy. The suspension, which has now come out, was for Adderall. This is not a recreational drug. You can describe it better than I can, Dave. I know you. This is an ADD. I think ADD disorder.
Where are you heading with this?
Well, you're out there on Xanax all the time. You're talking your Xanax, so I figure you know your prescription. Yeah, well,
I ain't no freaking junkie, man. Hey, you're giving the people. I'm a recovered drug addict now.
Get another cocktail.
Listen. You know, Adderall is a combination of you can just do a Google of this, but it is part of an amphetamine that's used in this. A lot of people can use this if they're ADD or ADHD. I think Jonathan Dwyer. I believe he had to petition to use this because of what he has. If you go through the right channels, you can get this cleared with the NFL. But obviously, and here's another thing. You know how I hate to pat myself on the back here, but you know, I had the source tell me first, right after that the suspension that was announced, that this was going to be for Adderall. Wesley announced it to the world on Twitter yesterday that he took it because his 11-year-old brother takes it. He had no clue that it was illegal.
That's not why he took it, but that's why he didn't know it was a banned substance.
Right, and athletes take people take this just to stay awake sometimes. On long drives, they take it as a weight loss kind of supplement. I'm willing to bet it was the latter with Wesley here, because it seems like you hear him tweeting about having to diet this and drink this and all like that. So it's a careless, stupid mistake. But here's why you keep him around, David. He costs nothing almost to keep around anyway.
Right.
You get into a situation into camp, maybe somebody goes down injured and all like that. Why not carry him, you know, through the full preseason, which he can play in the preseason games, and you know, you never know when you might need him. Now back to Leonard Pope, the contract info has come out on that. And originally, I said it was going to be a minimum for as high as $65,000 signing bonus. The signing bonus was actually $25,000, David. So that's all they have tied up in Leonard Pope is $25,000. If he doesn't make the roster, that's fine. People are immediately after he was signed saying, oh, well, there go. Our tight end situation is taken care of now. Leonard Pope has arrived. I don't see it that way. I'm not sure if you see it that way, but I do not think this takes away from anything from the Steelers going into the draft and still drafting a tight end in the first round, second round, wherever, somewhere in a draft based on value. We saw them. I put a post up later this week, too, about the events leading up to Heath Miller draft, and they signed two or three tight ends back to the roster in early April, and they still drafted Heath Miller, who fell in that round a couple of spots to him. What was it, at number 30 or 31? I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, you nailed it on Pope. I mean, he's a pass-catching tight end. He's not a great blocker. He's a big guy at 6'8", provides a target. He's probably going to be on the roster. You know, David Johnson – you know, David Johnson is what he is. He's shown in that Ravens game 2 years ago that he can do some things, but he's really a blocker. He's an H-back blocking type of guy who can do some other things. Wesley Saunders is more athletic. Probably, you know, one of the fun things, we actually had Wesley on last summer, and one of the interesting things there was he talked about coming out of Spurrier's pro-style offense, how, you know, it wasn't as complicated for him to learn the offense as it might be for some other guys. That was pretty interesting to hear, but he's still a guy who now this year, you know, maybe we see him make some strides. So another addition, kind of under the radar type stuff. We look at guys the Steelers have signed over the years from other teams like the Jonathan Scotts, some of the guys who fill roles. And this is that kind of signing. Again, a guy who, you know, hopefully the Steelers don't have to rely on at any point in time, but another body in camp. And I'm with you. I still think there's a good possibility the Steelers go tight end. I now would be surprised, even if Fleener's on the board, if the Steelers went tight end in the first round. But yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. You and I both like Fleener a lot. We've talked about it. But I do think maybe that mitigates kind of the need to go tight end quite as early as you might. So
why, let me ask you, why wouldn't you draft him there?
Here's the thing, and I tweeted yesterday. I think there are 10 guys, and let's get into our draft talk here. We've gone through most of the positions, and so let's talk about it, Dave. Because here are my guys. I got 10 guys who the Steelers are going to look at as potential first round picks. You've got three linebackers. You got Kuechly. You got Hightower, and you got Upshaw. You've got, in terms of the guard, you've got DeCastro. In terms of the tackles, you've got, now, you know, we can agree whether or not that these guys are, you know, legitimate guys you'd want to take. But Glenn, Martin, Adams are the three tackles. And in terms of interior defensive linemen, you've got Cox and Poe. And then the tight end, Fleener. And I think the Steeler pick is going to come from those 10 guys. I mean, I feel really comfortable that the Steelers are going to take one of those 10 guys. Now, you know, I don't want, and I know you don't want Adams, the kid from Ohio State, probably. You don't want Cordy Glenn, for the guard from Georgia. Some of these guys are going to be off the board. But do you think out of the list of 10, that's a decent list to work from where the Steeler pick comes from?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. Cox, I think, more of a five technique defensive end, though. You know, he's a defensive tackle right now. I think he translates more to a five technique. But of your list here, and I'm trying to, I remember you tweeting it, and I'm trying to go back through your timeline to get to those names. Wasn't it a response? Okay, I think I see it here. Of the names you listed here, let's kind of go through them here. Would you add Mark Barron to that list as well, too, the safety out of Alabama?
I do, because you know how I feel about our safeties. I'm not a huge Ryan Clark fan. I'm not saying Ryan Clark's a bad football player, but yeah, I mean, if Barron were there, I'd add him to the list. I guess it's as likely as he's there as Cox or Kuechly. So sure, I'd add him to the list.
Okay, and let's go through your list here. Luke Kuechly, I think if this guy was to fall down there, absolutely, unequivocally, positional value there. Where you get him, he is head and shoulders, in my opinion, over Upshaw, and I think that could be the pick. That's a big thing. Will he fall down that low? Same instance with DeCastro. I mean, yeah, that's like manna from heaven, the top interior lineman falling down to you that point. I think myself, you, I think everybody listening to this podcast would agree with that. When you get down to Cordy Glenn, Jonathan Martin, Adams, the tackles, the Steelers have not drafted a tackle in the first round of the NFL draft since Kevin Colbert has been in town, okay? And before that, Jermaine Stevens was the last one for that to happen. There's not good positional value, here as far as that goes. Now, on top of it, it's not a deep tackle class. So are you going to reach and take a guy like Jonathan Martin, who very well could be a second-round graded guy, okay? There's enough on tape to justify that he could be a second round talent. Cordy Glenn, you know how I feel about Cordy Glenn.
Yep, and I got to say he might be, and certainly in terms of linemen, he is the most divisive of all the draft picks you have guys all over the map on him.
Yeah, and there's people who say he's off the board at 10. There's people that said, like me saying that don't be surprised if he falls out of round one.
And Mayock came out apparently and sided kind of more your way on that.
Well, and that I find that surprising this late with Mayock too, and you know, kind of with the Poe situation with him.
He's got a lot of tape to watch also.
Yeah, that's true. Mike Adams, to me, that's a lot of eggs in the first round pick basket with a guy that might have a 5 cent head down the road.
You have to take one of the three. Who are you taking? We're taking Martin, right? If you have to take one of the three.
God, yeah, I guess. If I'm taking one of the three, I'm taking Martin. At least I think this is a guy that could develop at least into a starting right tackle. So those are those three right there. Cox, I think, they would not be opposed to taking a five technique first round defensive end. I think that's a fairly tight, safe type of pick. I just don't see it happening. Then I guess
you don't see it happen because he's probably off the board.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that basically leaves us on your list, David, with Upshaw, Hightower, Poe, and Fleener. If Poe falls there, man, I don't know, man. I just think this is a one gap guy, like I've mentioned in the past, better three and five, you know, but just a guy better to shoot the gap, not a nose tackle long term. Upshaw, man, there's enough flags on him. Do you really want to tie? And the Steelers, as we mentioned before, have not taken a true inside linebacker in the first round of draft in the Super Bowl era. Now, well, as I said before, if you want to call Timmons an inside linebacker when he was drafted, that's fine. That would make Upshaw the second. There's enough there to worry about him, along with his weight, along with his past knee history and all, that I think it would scare you off. So who did I say, Upshaw or Hightower? Yeah,
you've been saying Upshaw, but
okay, I've been meaning Hightower. I'm sorry. Upshaw is a guy that there is motor concerns associated with him. He is really an outside guy, but I still would not feel comfortable tying my wagon to him. And basically, after going through all that list, I guess you can see how I've kind of come to the Fleener aspect. Fleener offers you great positional value. He's going to play in year one. He's going to contribute. The bust rate of first-round tight ends just really does not exist.
Because none of them go, but yes, you're right.
Well, I mean,
you've got to be an exceptional athlete to go in the first round of tight end.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, they do go. There's only usually on average one a year. Last year was the first time in I forget how many years that a tight end did not get drafted in the first round, and that was Rudolph, and he was not head and shoulders, a guy that you say, oh, man, this is a first-round talent. I think Fleener is head and shoulders of this very thin tight end class, and I think he is a first-round talent. So walking through all those picks that you gave me, that is how I have arrived at Fleener. Now, you definitely feel different as far as maybe the Upshaw and Hightower situation goes. And of course, as we mentioned, if Keekley and DeCastro fall, how do you not take those guys?
Yeah, no, those are the two guys. I think you broke it down perfectly, Dave. I think the guys who are going to be there, I think Hightower is going to be there. If Keekley or DeCastro is there, that'd be the ideal situation. I think a couple of the tackles will be there. I think Fleener will be there. And then the question is kind of, Poe, Hightower, Upshaw, if those three guys are there, you know, which guy are you going to choose? I mean, you know, some guys have talked about possibly moving Upshaw inside. I don't have a good enough sense to whether, you know, he's a guy who could play inside. I mean, look, we saw it with Timmons. So maybe that's an idea if they feel like he can be a three down linebacker who can play inside. Maybe that's a different way to look at things. So I don't have a view on that. I haven't seen enough tape of him, and I don't know the Steelers thinking on it, but it was an interesting addition to the conversation. So, you know, I think you've broken it down really well.
Let me ask you this, David, on Hightower. Where do you see much upside? I mean, do you think he is – at his ceiling, though, do you think that you can go, oh, man, in 2 or 3 years, this guy could even be better than what he is right now? Do you see that in him?
I do. I mean, I see what I see is a guy who's got, really good instincts, really good aggressiveness, strength, attacking line of scrimmage. We've talked about his weaknesses, maybe a three-down linebacker. But again, I just want to say with the system, the way the game is going, with the system the Steelers run, there's not a lot of situations where you necessarily want or need to have an interior linebacker be on the field a lot of times on clear third down situations. And clear third down situations, they just don't arise as much anymore. That happens 5, 6, 7 times a game, ideally more. But, we're not talking 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3. We're talking 3rd and 8. And, the Steelers are going to go dime and guys are going to come off the field. So, I worry less about that aspect of things. I think also he's young. He's a junior coming out. So, yeah, I think, I don't think we see his prime for 5 years from now. Do I think he steps in and contributes a lot this year? I don't know. I doubt it. But I do think that the longer a guy sits in the crosshairs, the more we try to find things wrong with him. And certainly Hightower has been in Steelers fans' crosshairs for 6 weeks now.
Yeah, I just think the downside of him, he has more downside than he has upside, in my opinion. And I could be wrong with this, but I think you nailed the kind of the group of players there with Kuechly, Upshaw, Hightower, DeCastro, Glenn, Jonathan Martin, Adams, Cox, Poe, Flaner, and let's throw Barron in there because I've seen some situations where he could drop down there. But I think that's a good list, I just think that with Hightower, he very well could be the pick, but I just think that he just does not offer the upside that, say, a Flaner, who can grow into his body, become a better all-around blocker, does. Even Poe, I think Poe is a young, moldable piece of clay. I just don't think he translates to zero technique nose tackle. But I'm not saying it can't happen because he's just so raw. He gives you nothing but upside there.
And the good thing here is, the game has changed a little bit, but these guys are 20, 21 years old. You get a year to play behind Casey Hampton. You get a year to be around those guys, Troy Polamalu's of the world, who bring obviously what they bring to the table. And, there's hope. I mean, the good thing is the Steelers haven't missed on a first rounder in a while. And, we're going to give them, you and I are certainly going to give them the benefit of the doubt because we know how this works. And we know that these guys got a lot more information and they've got proven successful track records. But certainly we're going to speculate on this stuff. And I think all the stuff you speculated about Poe is right on the mark.
I mean, that's just one man's opinion. As I tell everybody all the time, man, just go pop in the tape, man. That's what gets me on all these. Let me hop up on my soapbox here. All these guys tend to follow Mike. I love Mike Mayock. I absolutely think he's one of the best at what he does. But when he comes, it's funny to watch all these other so-called draft experts out there, and I use that term loosely. Mike Mayock will come out and say something, and most of everybody follows suit right down the line. Make your own judgments out on these guys and throw them out there. I have been wrong. I was so wrong on Cam Newton last year and my diagnosis of him. Well, thank God I wasn't evaluating him from the Steelers. But, hey, we make mistakes on these things, as does everybody. I'm not an NFL scout. I just over years of watching tape and watching football, I feel like I have a better idea of how to evaluate these players. But, just do the homework yourself and see if it matches up. That's why, Cordy Glenn has not, ever since the Senior Bowl, and I've been able to pull up a lot of film on him, it just doesn't strike me as the guy. Now, I don't know how, if the teams are going to think of him as a guard or as a tackle or whatnot, but that's just risky business if you're asking me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dave, that's great.
Did I make a point there?
Yeah, no. I think we got it.
I don't think I did.
I think we got it. Well, let's wrap things up. I think that's really good stuff. Maybe we'll try to put together a list of who the Steelers might look at in the second round. I know you've done some work on, you love this guard from Midwestern State, Silatolu, whatever his name is.
Nasty kid, by the way. I went back and watched some more film. Been a while since I broke down this film on him. Boy, you want to talk about a guy that does not have an off button, that is nasty, that finishes blocks, has a lot of knockdown blocks, has sort of that cologne swat to him where he just swats the guy by him. Yeah, he played left tackle at that small college. He projects inside at the next level. But, yeah, boy, that boy is a beast on tape. Pulls a lot, traps a lot, even as a left tackle. So you can imagine he'll be able to do it as a left guard as well, too. So another name to keep your eye on in the second round.
Yeah, well, Dave, as always, great stuff. I'm going to make one little plea here. Certainly, Dave's got a lot more going on this Steelers stuff than I do. I still don't understand how, you know, as much as I love him, he's got 19,000 followers, and I got 1,000. I'm pissed off. It's Friday the 13th, and I'm pissed off. I need 2,000 followers. I mean, I'm embarrassed to be co-host here, and, you know, I feel like you know, the little brother times 10. So follow me on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. You can follow.
Don't follow me. Don't follow me. I got enough. Listen,
unfollow Dave at Steelers Depot.
Hey, it's nothing against you. It's just people. I think people watch me more for the train wreck situations. You know, my meltdowns and all like that. Maybe you need to melt down.
I got
to
start melting down.
You know, crazy people are always the ones that get the most attention, David. You're probably not crazy enough.
It's Friday the 13th. I need to maybe go on a spree.
But a lot of people don't follow me for my Steelers stuff. But probably that's probably only 1,000 of those. I think the other 14,000 follow me for the shenanigans. So, but yeah, follow David on Twitter. Listen, this guy's got a Bucko podcast.
And there's the music. That's the music to the Bucko podcast right there, my man Charlie Wilman. So, Dave, Friday the 13th, you got Dave at Steelers Depot. If you're listening, you know SteelersDepot.com is the place to go. You should be there 3, 4, 5 times a day checking out all of Dave's stuff there, all the latest news. He's got a stable of writers who do some really good work as well. So make sure you're doing that. Have a great weekend. Hopefully we get a couple Penguins wins before we get back at you Tuesday, and we'll be back at you real soon. Thanks for listening. Please, as always, send us your questions on Twitter or our Gmail account. And, you know, comments and feedback are really welcome, and pass it along to your friends.
Yeah, and also, hey, I'll be a year older next podcast, and in lieu of birthday presents, please make a donation in my name to your local Humane Society.
Fantastic stuff, Dave Bryan. All right. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.